joined by singer-songwriter, illustrator, documentary maker, and one of the original women of punk, Helen McCookery Book. She was last on the show in November 2022. We are absolutely loving Three Cheers for Toy Town. I've been playing it, Tony Smith's been playing it, and it's taken from her album, which is called Show Tunes from the Shadows, which was released on the 17th of January. So a very good morning, Helen.
Good morning, Michelle. It's lovely to speak to you again.
Hello. I like to do my little waffling introduction there.
No, it's nice to have a proper introduction because otherwise, how would people know who I was or who anybody was?
Three Cheers for Toy Town. When I received the track, literally it got me, I was saying to your fair, within the first sort of 5 seconds, and then that interest is there to listen to the rest of it, and it just brings a smile to your face. How did that track come about and who's playing on it?
Originally, I asked the record label, Tiny Global, because I've always released my music myself as a solo artist. And I originally asked them if they'd do a vinyl version of the album that I came in and played a song from in 2022. And they said, no, we'll do your next album. I think, but I'm not going to do a next album, you know. And but then I suddenly, once somebody says something like that to you, start writing songs. And I live in the suburbs. And you know, this is a sort of... You sort of live in all sorts of different places if you're a musician. And particularly in lockdown, I started really forensically examining what it's like to live where I live. And it just sort of came about naturally, really. It's almost kind of musing as you're kind of walking around thinking, oh, yeah, look, that's there, and all this kind of thing. And it suddenly kind of turned itself into something that's a mixture of a celebration and the criticism, both at the same time. And then as I was kind of writing it, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a trumpet fanfare on this? Because a lot of people who live in the suburbs feel very kind of pleased that they've got there, you know. I thought, oh, you know, I'd really like Terry Edwards to play on it. He used to play with the Higsons and all this kind of thing. He's got just a very, very beautiful, very bright, happy tone. And I just thought, I'm going to write to him. I've met him a couple of times. I'm going to write to him and see if he'll do it. And, I mean, his trumpet absolutely makes the track because it comes in like a big fanfare at the beginning. And it's almost like a pushing a go button. And then the song kind of flows along after that. And all of this album, I've produced it myself. I've done it in the kitchen, sitting at the kitchen table. The great thing about that is that you don't have to worry about sort of paying for studio time. You know, I've got a very simple program called Logic. I don't do any of the complicated things. I just spend a long time trying to get things right. If the vocal doesn't sound right, then I do it again. And if the guitar doesn't sound right, I do it again. Then I kind of contact musicians who are much better musicians than me and ask them to sort of contribute to it, and it's like the icing on the cake, really. So it's almost like having a vision, then making a jigsaw out of it, putting it together, and then sort of getting a complete picture and saying, yeah, that's my record, you know.
So where did this track fit into Show Tunes from the Shadows? You've got a 12-track album. Is there a theme to the album, or is it just a collection of different songs?
Yeah, well, the idea of the Show Tunes part came from, I asked a friend of mine who lives in Cardiff. I said, I don't know how to describe my music. And she said, oh, it's Show Tunes. And I thought, well, I'm not singing songs from musicals, but I have written children's musicals before, and musicals for theatre groups, actually. And I think there is that thing where I like the idea of people keeping a song in their head after they've heard it, and that kind of thing, which you get from musicals. And I thought, but not my songs are not 100%. They've got very uppy tunes, but they've quite often got a sting in their tail. So if I sort of say there's a kind of shadow behind every cheerful song that makes you go a little bit deeper into the lyrics and even some of the music, actually. So I can call it Show Tunes from the Shadows, and then I'm trying to explain a genre of music for myself, which I'm never sure how to describe it. So that's my kind of way of saying, well, this is the music that I make, you know. And it then kind of, when I was mixing everything and when I was finishing the sound, I think, yeah, you know, I can make a sound that kind of reflects this, that it's got some quite occasionally quite unnerving backing vocals and things that if it was a pop record, the producer would say no to. But because it's me, I can say, yes, I want that, because it's echoing this feeling that everything isn't quite as joyful and wonderful as it seems to be on the surface.
Does it take over your life, not only writing and performing, and you're doing all the recording as well? You forever going, I'll just do a little bit more, I'll just mix that, I'll just do that again. Are you like that, or can you go, yep, I'm going to put that to bed, it's done?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I mean, because I was doing it in the kitchen, so I was kind of pottering around and I'd be playing stuff. And when you're mixing stuff, that sometimes there'll be something you can't work out what's wrong with it or how to fix it. And I'd just be walking past, you know, putting the kettle on or something. I think, oh, I know what to do. And you just turn something, a tiny bit of volume, or pan something to the left or right, and the whole thing is kind of fixed. And so to that extent, it does take over my life. And I kind of live with art and with songwriting all the time. Like, I'll be travelling somewhere and a song just comes into my head. And, oh, you know, quickly, get the phone out, record it, you know. And you keep thinking, well, one day I'll be finished and I won't have anything else to say, but that just doesn't seem to happen. I think it's a bit of a almost a life sentence, really, but a very pleasurable one.
I have asked you this before, and I ask all my music guests, is there any songs on this particular album that feel like they came from the universe, that they came through so quickly, it's almost like you didn't write it? Or
oh, yes, loads. And I mean, I think that I think songs are sort of in the air and you just kind of catch them. And you sort of turn them into something that you can hear, you know, and it's and I think what songwriters have is an ability to sort of put their hand up and catch a melody out of the air or a rhythm out of the air and say, I know what to do with this, you know. And actually, part of it is just noticing that moment of when you've got something that you can turn into a song. And, you know, there are so many sounds and stuff, there's so many distractions. And I think you do kind of tune into a combination. I mean, with me, sometimes I write the words first and sometimes I write the music first. And I think my favourite is to write the words first, because that kind of triggers, it opens up new bits of brain. I think, oh, how can I make a song out of these really weird words, you know, and what do I want to do with this? And I suppose on the album, it's a song called Almost There, which is actually about my dad going away a lot when I was little. And I always used to wonder where he went and what it was like, and, you know, how can he go away and not be with a family and then come back again? And I've got real wanderlust. I mean, I go and do gigs all over the place, and I think that was the thing with Dad. He just had itchy feet, and he just, you know, part of his life was really enjoying traveling, going around and doing stuff, meeting other people and stuff. And I think that song I wrote, I went to Devon this time last year. And I wrote that sort of wandering around in Devon. There was nothing there. There was nobody there. I went and stayed by myself at Dartington Hall. And it was really, really cold and very frosty and sunny. And that song just kind of floated down and settled on top of me. And I just thought, oh, yeah, I've said something, you know, that's been in the back of my mind for years and years and years. And it's come out as a song, which is a really... I suppose it's almost like a kind of therapy, really, a song like that, you know.
What excites you about music in 2025?
Well, there are a lot of very, very interesting voices around. Last year, I decided to go to a lot of gigs and with people who had interesting voices. So I went to see a woman called Margaret Glasby, who's, I think she's a Canadian singer. I went to see Jonah's Policewoman. I went to see Colin Blunstone. I'm very interested in the way people sing in a non-singerly way. It's really fascinating the way people create a singing voice out of... And there's a woman called Anna B. Savage who's got a very, very interesting voice. And, you know, great singers are really fantastic. I love gospel choirs and things like that. But when you hear a person who might not naturally be... a standard trained singer who puts a lot of their personality into their voice, that's really interesting. And I think I'll carry on following up artists like that this year and go and see more live music with artists with interesting voices. And I think what happens in the independent world is that you give yourself a chance to develop your how you see things. And it's a sort of mission in some ways that you kind of you're trying to say something to yourself as much as to other people. And if other people engage with it, then that's a real bonus, you know. And sometimes it's a really unexpected, you know, it's a really unexpected song that engages people. And that's a really interesting phenomenon, really. But I think, you know, I always think that the whole idea of music ought to have a much bigger definition than it actually does, because it just covers so many different ways of writing music, singing music, all of those things. And also people who are very ambitious, there's nothing wrong with that at all, but then people who are more interested in forging an independent path, which is, that's the way I've always been in my life. And it took me a long time to accept that, you know, that perhaps, you know, that sort of being recognized everywhere, to me that's quite a nightmare. But being able to travel around and make music, and, you know, to, you know, groups of, you know, maybe 50 to 250 people is a really, really nice thing to do, because you feel like you're having a conversation rather than making statements to people. And the idea of having a conversation and connecting to people as more of a two-way thing is it's really appealing to me. And I think it's probably the same for a lot of independent artists, actually.
What would you be without music?
What would I be? Well, I'm a creative person anyway, so I know that I would be an artist. I mean, music came, it came up through punk. And I was at art college, and there were lots of punk musicians in the squat where I was living. And I just kind of got pulled into it, and it then became a real, total, 100% life. And you know what it is? I mean, it makes life beautiful when, you know, you sort of look out of the window and the weather's grim, the news is grim. Music sort of, it adds a dimension to people's lives that, I don't know about using the word spiritual, but it probably is. You know, people, all sorts of different music, kind of music that I don't engage with, I can see. You know, I've known people that absolutely love techno music. And it really makes them feel something above and beyond what's in front of their noses. And that's the fantastic thing about it. It allows people to travel, even when they're trapped in their body or their house or their sort of social or political situation. It allows people to imagine themselves out of those situations and travel to somewhere that's better for them, really.
Now, you were just saying you are one of the original women of punk, and you did numerous sessions for John Peel. What was it like being in that moment in time, and what was it like doing all those sessions for John Peel?
Well, it was a very exciting time. I mean, punk was quite a dangerous, you know, there's a bit of a mythology about punk, about how it brought lots of things, great things, which it did. You know, there were great things about punk, but it also had a dangerous underbelly. And but I learned that I could write songs and I could play. I was a bass player, and I learned that I could actually play bass. I started to understand what was happening musically and all the shouting and everything that we were doing. And fairly quickly, probably about 1979, I started writing songs. And I was working in a shop in Brighton, writing to John Peel, and getting no attention for that. And I thought, oh, I'll stop then, you know. And I was listening to the show one night, and he said, oh, somebody called Helen McCookery Book was writing letters, and she stopped. I wonder what's wrong, you know. And we sent my band, The Chef, sent a cassette to him, and he said, look, I can't. He wrote back, which I was really surprised. I can't play cassettes on the radio, make a record. And just at that point in time, the local record label, Atrix, asked us to make an EP. And he invited us in for a session. It was amazing. I could not have possibly imagined ever doing anything like that. And almost everything that's happened since then in my life has been like that, you know, because I was so quiet when I was younger, total introvert, you know, wouldn't say boo to a goose, all of those kind of things. But music and those sessions, I think I actually think they sound really good. Damaged Goods. There's a label called Damaged Goods that brought them all out on a CD and later a vinyl album. And you sort of listen to them and they think, actually, without realising, we kind of knew what we were doing as songwriters, but we were so busy doing it that we never really stepped back and thought about it, you know. And meeting, going and recording at Maida Vale Studios was fantastic, massive, great studio. And it could be quite intimidating, but the people who used to produce those records were used to people like us who were quite scared. And they were very good at calming you down and enabling you and getting the best out of you, which I'm really grateful for, actually, because that was a very positive experience of recording that kind of raises your expectations, I suppose, you know, and makes you think, well, I should always enjoy this, and I'm going to go in with a mindset that it's going to be very enjoyable as a process.
Now, your surname, McCookery Book, how did you get the surname?
Just for a joke, I had loads of, I kept my songwriting book and my sketchbook in the kitchen on a shelf with the cookery books, and I wrote McCookery Book on it. And when we were, there were lots and lots of punk bands. I think there's about 50 or 60 punk bands in Brighton. And a photographer from the local paper, the Evening Argus, got us all together in the street, took us in, you know, he went into an upstairs window and took a photograph of us all, masses and masses of us. And he phoned round to see what everybody's name was. And I was sitting in the shop where I was working. He said, oh, you know, what's your name? And I said, oh, it's Helen McCallum. He said, oh, you can't have that. He said, I've got a Dick Damage and a Tim Vicious. And just on the spur of the moment, I thought about my sketchbook, my songbook. I thought, oh, yeah, I'm called Helen McCookery Book. And when the local paper came out, we had a centre spread. And I was right at the back, tiny little figure at the back, and this massive headline, Helen McCookery Book is the one at the back in a hat. And I thought, I'm going to have to keep that, you know. And there have been times when I've been writing music for serious documentaries and things where the documentary makers have said, please don't use that name. And I'm kind of thinking, well, the Beatles is a silly name, but nobody says that now, you know. Yeah. So really the only problem it gives me now is that when it's on posters, it takes, you know, because I often do my own artwork for posters, it takes me ages to write my name. Takes up a lot of space.
It should have been Smith, maybe.
Yes, yeah. Or just Muck. Yes. <Yeah. laughs> I don't know.
If only you'd have thought that back in the day. So the album has come out on the 17th of January. As you said, it's on Spotify and the digital platforms, but you've also got your first vinyl as well, and also CDs, which is a great way to support music. Spotify is lovely, but if you want to help a musician to be able to produce more music, then go along to gigs and obviously buy merchandise and buy CDs and vinyl.
Well, yeah, the vinyl, I was listening to it this morning because now I have to learn the songs. It was quite funny. I was talking to the head of the label. I was saying, oh, you know, I'm going to have to learn these songs because I'm going to be going out on tour later this year. And he said, what, you mean you don't know them? I was like, well, no, because I've been so busy playing them and singing them that it's a whole different mechanism in your brain to get the words into your head. So I was listening to the vinyl this morning and it does sound lovely. And actually picking up a record, a vinyl album that you've made yourself, is really thrilling. You just pick it up and this is me, you know, and it's quite an extraordinary feeling, you know.
But there is something really nice about having the vinyl and the whole amount of work that went into it.
Yeah, I've just actually bought a proper, it's quite cheap, but it's a very good turntable because I've been buying my friends, you know, as a musician, you want to support your friends as well. And I've been buying their records for quite a long time and not had anything decent to play them on. And I just thought, okay, you know, bringing out your own record, you've got to. And of course, I've got all my old records and it's really interesting listening to them again. And that kind of, oh yeah, I remember this, I remember that, you know, what a great record. And mixing that in with my friend's records is a really, well, you just think, you know, I've been alive for a long time and there's been some really great music around and I'm, you know, it's in my collection, you know, it's a great feeling.
It's really lovely always to speak to you, and hopefully you'll be back in a little bit later, maybe sort of April, May, come in and perform live again. It'd be lovely.
Definitely. Thank you.
Lovely. This is Helen McCookery Book and this is Three Cheers for Toy Town.
go shopping, we all buy the same things we want for nothing. Hear our bank account sing, the doorstep dropping, with all the courier brings.
Three cheers for Tom.